That's the Wisconsin Youth Symphony Orchestra performing Grieg's Piano Concerto in A Minor. Deerfield's Charlie Collar on piano.
Our next guest has been studying music and kids and brains and has found amazing benefits for things like learning, literacy, and more for youth who get serious musical training. And new findings out this week, a two-year study shows improvements in certain kinds of cognitive ability for kids who participate in long-term community music programs.
Nina Kraus joins us now. She is professor and principal investigator at the Auditory Neuroscience Lab at Northwestern University. Nina, great to have you with us.
Oh, good to be here.
In your research out this week, you looked at a community music program for at-risk youth, and what did you find?
Well, let me put the work in some context. So, in our lab, so I'm a biologist, and we study the biology of learning, of auditory learning, and the ways in which certain forms of enrichment, like music education, speaking another language, and other forms of deprivation, such as living in poverty, growing up with a hearing loss or a learning disability, may impact auditory learning. And so we have actually two neuroeducational projects, one involving Chicago Public Schools and the other involving the Harmony Project out in L.A. Both of these are programs in which children receive music education in existing and successful programs. And they came to me because they were noticing, the founders of these programs were noticing that the children who studied music were succeeding and doing better across the board in other aspects of their schooling. And they wanted to know what was going on in their brains. And, you know, being a biologist and interested in the biology of learning, and really our work is rooted in how what we can find in the laboratory can be applied in real-world situations, I was anxious to take a look at this. And so to answer your question about this most recent study, this was published in the Journal of Neuroscience this week, where we were following children in the Harmony Project, and these children were randomly assigned to either they were taken from the Harmony Project waiting list. Harmony Project has many more kids who want to be in the music program than they can support. And some of the kids were able to begin the music training right away, and another group had to defer, but they were still promised a spot later on. And we measured the brain's responses to sound in these children, both before they began music, 1 year afterwards, and then 2 years after that. I can tell you a little bit about how we measure these responses to sound. Of course, as I'm talking to you now, mm-hmm. the nerves in your brain that respond to sound are giving off electricity, and we can capture these electrical events with scalp electrodes. Now, the particular biologic approach that we use is very sensitive to how it is that the nervous system processes the fundamental ingredients of sound. So for both speech and music, sound consists of pitch, timing, and timbre. So these elements of pitch, timing, and timbre that you can see, and I'm sure you in radio get to see these signals all the time. You can see in these elements of pitch, timing, and timbre in the sound wave. But we want to know, how does the brain represent these elements of sound.
And we'll get into that in just a moment. A reminder that we're talking to Nina Kraus with the Auditory Neuroscience Lab at Northwestern University about the impact of music education on how we learn, how kids learn in particular. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. How has music education helped you or your kids? Does it help you? Do you think it helped with your education and with your life in other ways? Call in now at 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. So, Nina, you were talking about how our brains read pitch and timbre and that sort of thing. So how is it that music education helps our brains with that kind of auditory stimulus and then in turn affects reading and the other ways we learn?
Well, it turns out that that there is a lot of overlap between speech and music in both. You know, these are both signals that are handled through sound. They both consist of pitch, timing, and timbre, and they are processed through overlapping circuitry in the nervous system. So that if you strengthen the your sound to meaning connections through playing a musical instrument, so you're listening to the elements of sound and you are imparting meaning both by how you're learning to play the instrument, how you're thinking about the sound, that is strengthening pathways that are also important for processing speech. So you would like to have a nervous system that, because of its practice in doing very complex sound-to-meaning processing through music, becomes a machine, if you will, that processes any sound automatically with greater precision and fluidity.
Do we know how much music training kids need to see the payoffs? I mean, if a kid goes to piano lessons once a week, is that going to do the trick?
Well, there's no specific dosage effect. but I can tell you, and this is something that we saw in this study as well, is that after 1 year, we did not see these fundamental brain changes in how the brain automatically responded to speech sounds. But we saw these after 2 years. So, and this is important because, you know, it takes the nervous system some time to change in fundamental ways. On the one hand, it's very important to have a nervous system that is flexible and that changes based on how we learn. On the other hand, you can't have a nervous system that's changing every second. And so it's really through persistent and repetitive connections that are made that these fundamental ways in which the brain automatically processes speech sounds become shaped.
It's amazing. So after this couple of years of music training, there are measurable differences, I guess, in the way our brains light up or our nervous system reacts to different stimuli?
Yeah.
Interesting. So, and then how is it when we start measuring performance in the classroom? I know a lot of your other research has gone in that direction as well.
Well, so there has been a lot of research linking these particular brain measures that we were able to measure in the Harmony Project kids with language skills, especially you know, such as reading and hearing speech in a noisy place like a classroom or a playground. What was especially interesting to me about the Harmony Project children is that we know that these children are inordinately successful by real-world metrics. The children in the Harmony Project, so you know, the founder, Margaret Martin, won a presidential award for the success that this program has had in keeping kids in school, out of jail, and graduating and going on to get good jobs and college. And so, you know, it's really the part of the inherent interest in studying these children was trying to get at the heart of what might be happening in their nervous systems that could account for some of these successes.
We're talking to Nina Kraus from Northwestern University's Auditory Neuroscience Lab. She's sharing research on the ways musical training can adjust kids' brains, maybe adults too, we'll get into that, and our nervous systems, and help with learning, boost our learning systems in a way.
And you can join our conversation. Have you felt these benefits in your life, or have you seen it in your own children? If you're a music teacher, how do you see things like band and choir and music lessons helping kids in your life? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Music education is good for our brains and it helps kids learn. Those are some of the findings from our guest. Nina Kraus stays with us. She researches music, learning, and the brain at Northwestern University.
And you can join the conversation. How has music affected your life, your kids? What's the value of music education? And would you like to see more of it in our schools and communities? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk@wpr.org.
And we go to our callers now. Jennifer is first in Monticello. Hi there, Jennifer.
Hi, good afternoon. I just wanted to say I'm a teacher myself, and when I was in fifth grade, I learned a song called 50 Nifty United States.
Mm-hmm, I know that
and
one.
I don't want to sing it because I'm not a music teacher, but I have taught that to my first graders every year, and then they point out the states on the map. And they all know them by the end of the year. And I am old enough that I've had some students come back and they say, you know, I still remember that, and that's how I remember where the states are.
Oh, and, interesting.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of songs about the solar system. I try to incorporate music as much as I can into my just general education class that I, you know, that I teach. And it's just, it's one way that I learned. And it's even, you know, now when I have state graduate classes, I still make up songs to remember things.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. And thanks for bringing that song to mind again, 50 Nifty United States. But there is something about music that makes it easier to remember things. At least it seems that way. So, is that part of this, Nina?
Yeah. So music really has a privileged role to memory. And I mean, even before things were written down, history was transmitted through bards and song. We, you know, think about how you strengthen your memory by some of the musical tasks you might be asked to do. So, for example, for just tuning your instrument, you need to remember the note and then tune your instrument. If you have a musical idea and I'm going to improvise on it, I need to remember what your idea was if I'm going to improvise on it. And if I'm trying to play, say, a passage that another musician has played, I have to hold that in my mind in order to play it. So your auditory working memory, especially, is really used very much with music, and we use our auditory working memory just, you know, just right now as you're listening to me on the radio, you need to remember what I just said a few minutes ago if you're going to make sense of what I'm saying right now. Working memory, of course, is important as we read. We have to remember what we just read to make sense of what we're reading in the moment.
Interesting. Well, Nina, we've been focusing on kids so far, but say there's an adult who's not done the music thing. They haven't taken the lessons. Is there a benefit for their brain, for their learning, for their memory to get out and get started, even if they're not kids?
Yeah. So what we know, biologically speaking, is that the nervous system continues to change and continues to have the capacity to learn until we die. And some work that that you know, one asks What about music education that you have had earlier in life? Might that have an impact when you are older? And what we've been able to determine is that people who have had musical experience early in life, you know, when I talk about this, I often will ask an audience, how many of you had music lessons as children and how many of you are playing music now? And of course, many had some years of music lessons and few are continuing to play music. But it would appear that the influence that early music making has on, again, being able to neurally process speech sounds. You know, as we get older, one of the most common complaints is difficulty hearing in noisy restaurants, for example. And people with musical training have nervous systems that, again, seem to be able to pull out relevant signals of sound, speech sounds, better than people who had not had that in their background.
And we're going to go to another caller here. Carolyn joins us in Appleton. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a comment. I think, thank you so much to your guests, and I'm so excited that there's some hard data on the benefits of music in children's lives, but also in adult lives. I'm a musician. I've been playing music since the fourth grade, and I know how much it's impacted my life and my relationships with people. But I think that's a hard thing to convince our elected officials of, and I think that we take music education in public schools for granted. And I can see that because I've spent the last couple summers volunteering to teach music in Haiti, which is a very impoverished country, and they don't incorporate music education into their school. It's a very special thing. And what I see there are these community music schools popping up all over the country because people in these communities are seeing the value of music education for youth in Haiti, the way that it teaches them to communicate, to listen. Also, it's a social equalizer. Someone who's very well off can sit down and play next to someone who's very poor, and you're both playing the same music. And I think that the social and the learning values of that are seen elsewhere, but I wish more people saw that here in the United States, and I hope that people take advantage of the opportunities that they have to learn music.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us, Carolyn. Really, really fascinating story about what you've seen with music in Haiti. What do you think about some of those points, Nina?
Well, music, as, you know, as I said at the very beginning, I study learning. I study the biology of learning. And it would appear that music is a really wonderful model for learning because in order, you know, we learn through many, many different ways, but in order for learning to occur in the brain, we need to be engaging our senses. You know, I say we are sensory, cognitive, and reward systems. So what do I mean by that? Our senses is the information we get through our eyes and ears. Cognitive is how we remember and pay attention to things, how we think about things. And reward is how we feel about them. And we know that learning happens when these three aspects of nervous system function are brought into play. And so music very much engages the sensory, cognitive, and reward circuitry in the nervous system, and as such, seems to be an especially powerful model for learning, especially learning through sound.
Nina, very briefly before we're out of time, do you think there's enough research there to say, hey, money spent on music education is money well spent?
Well, you know, I can provide the data, and I think it speaks for itself.
All right, Nina, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
That's Nina Kraus. She's a professor and principal investigator at the Auditory Neuroscience Lab at Northwestern University. You and I have both done music, Veronica. I feel like, I don't know, some of it probably pays off, at least in being a radio host, the kind of focus that she was talking about in the auditory learning.
Right. Every time we do these shows, I want to go home and play my piano. I think you just need to bring your saxophone in one day and I'll do some free jazz over it. And we'll just, you know, make some music on the radio.
Turn the show into perform. Maybe let's do that on the midnight shift sometime.
Okay, maybe we should try it out first. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. The Wisconsin Youth Symphony Orchestra takes us into the news here on Central Time on the Ideas Network.